Welcome to the Women in Business Impact Lab podcast. Maximize your leadership potential and professional advancement and be inspired. We're delighted to be your source for personal, professional, and organizational growth and development from a women in business perspective. We share our original research, explore industry and workforce trends, and interview female executives, allies, and thought leaders from across the globe. Join us for practitioner-oriented content around all things women in business, leadership challenges, talent management, organizational development, change management, and diversity and inclusion.
Neelam Chand, welcome to the conversation today.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
It is a pleasure to be with you. I'm John Westover. I'm joined by my co-host, Angela Schill. Today, we're going to be talking with Neelam about navigating through barriers, internal critiques, and self-doubt that hinder authenticity. And we'll be doing that all within kind of a diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging lens, which is something that Neelam has a really strong background in. As we get started today, I wanted to share Neelam's bio with everybody. Neelam Chand has dedicated more than 14 years to being an influential diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging practitioner, making significant strides in fostering inclusive cultures across various organizations. In the face of recent critiques that labeled DEIB initiatives as divisive, she embarked on a transformative journey of self-reflection. This introspective process involved critically reevaluating and enhancing her DEIB approach, driven by the simple yet profound questions of what belonging truly means and how to search for it within. And I could go on, Neelam, but I'm going to pause there. Anything you would specifically like to highlight by way of your background or personal context before we dive into the broader conversation?
No, I'm a mother, and that's definitely been a big part of the introspection part. It's when you have a little one who's constantly mirroring you and also challenging you, you're forced to look within, to find sanity within. So I would add that part and how that definitely plays a role in how I show up as a practitioner.
You know, we're just diving right in here, talking about authenticity and within this bigger context of DEIB. I'm wondering if you could share with us the importance of authenticity in terms of belonging.
Yeah, so I'll just start with my personal sort of journey and my personal understanding on belonging. I was born in California, and I was raised in a neighborhood where people looked like me. I've never had to really question belonging or my identity. And then at the age of around 9, I moved here to Utah, and, you know, we moved to Davis County, Utah. And that was the first time I was actually confronted with this idea of belonging. I was confronted with understanding my own identity because I was the only person that looked like me, sounded like me, dressed like me, practiced the same religion. Like, I was the only person that held some of these sort of unique qualities in a space that was highly homogenous. And it was then when I realized, ooh, I don't look like I belong here. I don't look like I should be here. And so I started to internalize my experiences of sort of exclusion. And I started to internalize it in a way where I thought it was my fault. My skin color was my fault. My accent was my fault. Because I wasn't, you know, the predominant religion, Mormon, that was my fault. My parents were also going through a divorce. That was my fault. So it was like internalizing all the ways in which I didn't belong as if it was completely my fault. Well, fast forward to today, I'm a DEIB practitioner promoting belonging. And I talked about belonging in the ways that we talk about belonging, fitting in, feeling like you can be your true self. But I never, ever actually felt belonging in the ways that I was talking about it, if that makes sense. And the reason for that is because I never actually went back to sort of unravel myself from the internalized feeling of exclusion. I never actually healed myself. So here I am promoting belonging and inclusion in strategy, in workplace culture, in interpersonal relationships, in socialization. And I myself didn't actually feel that sense. I didn't feel connected to even the term belonging. So that's my one indication that I authentically wasn't even showing up as a practitioner up until I turned 40, which was only like last summer. So I'm talking about like all these years feeling this sort of deep internalized sense of non-belonging, promoting belonging as my profession and not feeling it up until last summer. And so I'll tell you quickly what happened. I turned 40. I was like, I really want to invite some of my really close girlfriends and do like a kind of a retreat style where we could just focus on, relaxation. A lot of these women are mothers. A lot of these women were, some of them were going through a divorce. Some of them were just dealing with some big stuff. So I invited a lot of these women to come and hang out with me for the weekend. And part of the wellness part, we got these massages, and my masseuse started to like a massage a part of me on my shoulder. She was massaging this part, and I have never felt this before, but I felt this phenomenon where I just wanted to cry as she was massaging that part of me, right? So I start bawling loudly in this, in the massage table, and I'm like, I am so sorry. I was so like concerned of what she was going to think of me, and she's like, no. A lot of energy is coming out of this area. And she's like, you need to tell your body. And I don't know how she got in tune with it, but she's like, you need to tell your body in this moment to let go of the things that aren't serving you so that that part can just leave. And as soon as I did that, it started to, like, I felt this lift. And then I think, so, what it turns out that she was a spiritual sort of. She was very spiritually connected as a masseuse and also just very, very connected. She said that, I have a message for you to really look back at your childhood and understand self-love. And so I'm just sitting here bawling. It's supposed to be just like a relaxation massage. It wasn't. But from that prompt, I was like, self-love? Well, what is that? And since then, I've just been sort of on this discovery of self-love. And what I found out is that I did not have, I internalized all the ways in which I didn't belong. Therefore, I didn't really love myself. So I've just been going on this journey of trying to really, truly embrace belonging and showing up in ways that are vulnerable and authentic to allow others to feel a sense of belonging as well. And so that's kind of, it's a long story. But
It's a good
that is sort of where
story.
my evolution has led me into this idea of belonging. I'm going to pause there.
I just find it so interesting because you're talking about as a child saying, it's my fault, it's my fault, it's my fault. And the underlying message beneath that is there's blame or the lack of self-love. So for you to come to this space where that's been flipped as an adult is powerful.
It's powerful, and I'm having to go back to my young little self who moved here to Utah even before that. So this didn't just happen in Utah, but I grew up in a family where I'm the introvert and my whole family extroverts, loud. They say what's on their mind, and I always felt a little odd because I just wasn't the person to speak up. I wasn't the person to I was very quiet. And so there was also that, like in my family dynamic, the sense of belonging was also in question. I just never really understood it and knew it. So then carrying that into a socialized aspect, like school or, work or whatever that looks like, that is just the thing that continues to get triggered. is this idea of not belonging. And so when I think about belonging, and if those who don't feel like they belong, I really would urge folks to go all the way back to the first moment where they felt like they were different, and sort of reconcile that to truly feel belonging now. And there is a great deal of vulnerability that's involved in that process. I'm in the process now. And it's a great deal of vulnerability and openness that you would have to feel to access those things.
What are some of the methods that you've implemented in order to do that? What are some of your, what's been that path for you to have that healing?
Yeah, it's a good question. For me, it's been kind of creating my community of support system, therapist, acupuncturist. I definitely went back to that masseuse and her and I connected over so many different things. And then personally, just really finding moments of stillness. So, you know, I do meditation. I've deepened my meditation practice, breath work, journaling, all of those really kind of trendy things that people talk about, but truly actually help in this journey. If you have clear intentions and deeper purpose, these mechanisms are more than just trendy things. They actually truly connect you to the things that you're seeking. And so those things have been really helpful. And as they materialize, I've been thinking about how to be a DEIB practitioner in this new sort of way of thinking. And this isn't new for, this isn't new in the DEIB movement, to be mindful, to access consciousness, to think about collective healing. Those things have always been part of the conversation. But for me, it feels like it's the first time, because it's the first time that I'm actually internalizing it rather than just teaching about it. I'm actually integrating it into my life. And I feel like because of that, I'm showing up differently in this DEIB space.
Can I ask you about that a little bit? And you'd mentioned earlier about how, you know, the current polarization and politicalization of diversity, equity, inclusion, and belonging work throughout the country, but we can focus specifically in Utah. It's been challenging, and there's really been this, you know, as it's become polarized, there's been this narrative around divisiveness, like diversity, equity, inclusion is dividing us rather than bringing us together, which certainly is not the purpose. Like I think our intention certainly is to help everyone to feel needed, wanted, valued, that they belong, that they have an opportunity to contribute in meaningful ways, to give everyone opportunity to bring their whole authentic self to the work that they do, et cetera. I think that's the purpose. That's the goal of DEIB work. Yet it's been largely framed, you know, in some political circles around this, like this divisive thing. And you mentioned earlier about how that is something you've had to reconcile with. And as I read your bio, you know, that's something that you acknowledge, that, you know, reframing a little bit. Could you tell us more about that? Tell us about how, you know, in conjunction with this powerful experience you had, you know, in the last year or so, coupled with some of the larger kind of context, or, you know, the political and social context around DEIB work, you know, what can you tell us about kind of how your journey of trying to reframe this and reshape your approach?
Yeah. So I've been doing this work for about 14 years in several different sectors. And I'm not going to speak for other practitioners, because I think we all have different methodologies. But something that I found that we have in common is we tend to react quite a bit, because circumstances is always changing. And when it comes to DEIB, which, by the way, the acronyms is a very new thing, used to be called multiculturalism, used to be called justice. I mean, there's so many different terminologies around it. This acronym is the thing that feels divisive, but the terms have always been there. The work has always been there. But throughout the years, even before 2020, there's just sort of this reactive response. It's because this work has always been questioned. It's always been questioned and challenged. So the fact that it's being questioned and challenged now isn't very new, but we've always approached it as, no, you got to see this point with data, with business benefits, where there's so many different things that we're trying to prove that this is the right thing to do. It's very reactive to what's coming to us. And we don't get a lot of space to innovate or create because we're always responding to the reactions. And so 2020 came along, and there's this huge conversation nationally on issues of racism. And it starts going into these corporate spaces that, by the way, has never really had conversations around racism as openly. And it was a very reactive state of mind. We went from not talking about racism to companies, I'm talking about local companies, signing on to, we are going to be anti-racist. And so we use these very big, bold terminology, which as practitioners felt good because we've been fighting for this. But there was something a little off that it was so quick and it was a switch. And we, at least for me, I wasn't sure how much people were grasping it. Well, now we're seeing that today. We're seeing how fragile it is today, that there wasn't an actual emotional connection to this work. We, as practitioners, I'll just speak for myself, reacted and said, okay, anti-racism, what does that mean? What does that look like? What's the framework? What does that look like in strategy? How could you build that in your culture? Like, there was a missing piece for me, which is that emotional connection. What does anti-racism actually mean to you? And what are some wounds that you may have that's not promoting anti-racism? And so I think I stop for a moment. So I see these bills coming out that are attacking DEIB here in Utah, locally and nationally. And my instinct is to react and just to say they don't know, and they don't know, and we need to educate them, and we need to speak louder, and we need to go stronger. And I feel like that's just a natural instinct of mine because that's what I've been doing for 14 years. This time, I wanted to take a step back and say, okay, there's some feelings behind this. There's some real emotions beyond fear and discomfort. There's some actual trauma happening. And because from that place of trauma is why it's creating this other level of hurt. And so, how can we address that? How can we have real, authentic conversations without judgment, without blaming, without shaming, without reaction? And so a lot of that comes down to pausing for a moment, reframing, and thinking about what is it to have mindful conversations? What is it to connect with each other through real empathy, through that sense of belonging? I really kind of connect with people on that level so that we can start redefining and creating rather than reacting. And I know I'm saying a lot of words because I haven't yet figured out strategically how it's going to materialize. So I couldn't give you tangibles quite yet, but I'm close. And I know that I'm not the only one. And I know that there's been several other practitioners, activists that have thought in these ways, beautiful artists, beautiful, amazing, even very well-known activists that have thought about things in this way of love. It all kind of comes down to love. And so for me, don't know how that's going to change how I'm going to actually do the work, but it's definitely changing in the way that I'm showing up rather than just reacting to these narratives.
Yeah, that makes sense, and I appreciate that description. And it's certainly it's hard in a polarized, charged, emotionally charged environment to be able to have conversations around topics that are already tricky and messy, and so being able to to create a safe place where people can have the conversations, I think is always, it has always been an important part of the work. And I think the current context only highlights even more why it's so necessary. Because if people feel attacked, if they feel judged, if they feel shoved in a corner, they're not in a mental headspace to be able to engage in meaningful, productive dialogue, right? And so, you know, it's partly why we're here. And how do we find a way out of this current situation? I'm not sure either. I'm not sure I have any sort of answer to that. But I would like to think that, you know, good people, you know, who have honest disagreements and different opinions and different ways of perceiving the world, that we can come together and have good conversations, get to a common understanding. Because I do think most people want to treat others with dignity and respect. I think most people want to do right by others, and most people want people to feel safe. We just need to figure out a way that we can do it, figure out a way to do it where people feel like they could be part of that conversation.
Yeah. And it kind of comes back to this idea of belonging. So folks that are fighting this are feeling some sense of exclusion. And, yeah. You know, and look, there are some folks that are deliberately by design making this happen. And I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the folks that are sort of in the middle, that are easily swayed, that feel like they don't have a stake in the conversation because they feel excluded. And then on the flip side, this reminder of these bills, the messages that are being sent to folks that it's deeply impacting based off of their identity, they're also being reminded that, oh, by the way, you don't belong. So just this idea of belonging is under such big question for everyone. So for me, it's kind of like, let's redefine what belonging actually means and then solve a problem from that space, not from a place of, I don't feel, if I was trying to solve a problem from a place of my 10-year-old me, who was told that your skin color doesn't belong here, trust and believe, I'm going to have some very limited perceptions and very limited ideas. I'm not going to be able to help solve a bigger problem. But from a place of healed and understanding what belonging actually truly means within, I can create. And I feel like so can everybody else. We just got to get there. And I think we can. I think we truly can. At least, John, from what you said, majority of people want to feel this level of respect and give respect and dignity. We're not convincing people of those things. That's already there innately. We just need to capitalize on that.
Yeah. And I think it's, I mean, when you talk about in your own life having that dissonance, that disconnect between, and I've heard this before, where people are in these fields where they're advocates and they're working and they're educating, and suddenly they realize that there's not an alignment in this deep way that they, I don't think it's inauthentic, because every time I hear these stories, it's like a moment in time where they realize that there's this dissonance. And then it's this moment of discovery. And for you to be so honest about that journey creates a place of safety for people to listen to you and see you take a step back and create that, you know, to have that space of creativity and innovation that's not reactive. I don't have the answers either, but I think when I hear you explain this, I think this creates a space of safety for people to step back, to reconsider what they've thought, and to maybe find some alignment where they might not even know there's a misalignment, or they might not know that they don't feel like they're belonging. And that's the fuel behind what's taking place that is encouraging further disbelonging, unbelonging. And so, I don't know, I Neelam, I just want to thank you for being so brave in telling your story. Cause I think it takes bravery to admit, like, this is what I've been doing and now this is what I'm discovering. And I guess my question is, how do we help people recognize that there is healing to be done? And then how can we do that collectively? And how can we all implement that, you know, in our spheres of influence?
I mean, you answered the question, Angela, because it's through this level of vulnerability. If I'm vulnerable, then you're willing to be. And I think And I love what you're saying too, this dissonance. It's this level of survival, especially as practitioners and folks that are in this work, there's some level of survival that we're reacting to. And that so that's a natural ability that we've had to sort of carry on. And so it's kind of getting out of survival mode and really trying to heal some parts of you where you're internally generating the sense of belonging, the sense of stillness. That externally it doesn't really matter and you don't really waver, and that you're more willing to be vulnerable without the fear of judgment, without the fear of, being excluded, because that won't matter. And so for me, I don't really care what people think. Me, some people might think I'm like some hippy dippy, like eat, love, pray, like this is so odd. And I don't really care because I would rather go that route than the route of living in my sort of trauma and in my survival mode. And so the more I can talk about being vulnerable and open and admitting to, like, I didn't know what the hell I was doing in 14 years. And now I feel like I have some grip on it. That like I feel like the more we can get people to tell their stories of that sense of, oh, something deep inside me is not as it doesn't feel natural, and I want to address that, the more we can have these more like real conversations. So I think I just encourage people to just be open and willing to engage in heart-to-heart conversations.
And I'm thinking, I'm a straight cisgender white dude, and so I try to be in this space and be an advocate and be an ally. But I also know that I come from a place of privilege, and I understand it can be tricky, for someone with my privilege to try to even step into this space and have conversations, because I want to allow others to lead out. And I don't want to perpetuate more problems by by being too loud or whatever. And that's some of the dynamic that I know that a lot of people feel. I was talking to a friend, a colleague recently, who is another straight white man. And he was really talking a lot about this divisiveness. And I get that that's a perspective that people have. It's not one that like I can't resonate. It doesn't resonate with me. I really don't understand it, because I'm like a white straight cisgender, a straight cisgender white dude always belongs. Like every context that we're in, like society is built for us. And so this idea that somehow I feel excluded, that doesn't make sense to me. That doesn't resonate with me. But the reality is that's how a lot of people are feeling. They feel that it's divisive. They feel like they're not included. They feel like they're not part of the conversation. They feel like othered in some way. I don't know. Like we just have to have some, while I don't understand it fully and I don't agree with that kind of a perspective, I need to have some sort of compassion and empathy around the fact that people do feel that way and that they're coming to the conversation that way. Because if I can't, how am I ever going to have a productive dialogue with them, right?
Yeah. And if only more folks can admit that, right? If only more folks can admit that I am afraid because I feel like I'm being excluded, that when DEIB comes up, I feel like I'm being attacked, or I feel like I'm the problem and that scares me. And I don't want to feel like I'm the problem. And if anything, I've thought that I was actually contributing to a society in such positive ways, and I'm being confronted with that by this. And that maybe that stems from childhood. Like if those conversations can happen, and if people could just admit, just to say, I'm afraid, I feel so much discomfort, and I don't know how to navigate this, rather than quickly turn into action, which then turns into a bill. I feel like there is just a lot more space of connectivity. I can say, oh, you feel like you don't belong in this conversation. Oh, you feel like you're the problem. Hey, guess what? I felt that too. Let me tell you a little bit about that, because I felt like I was the problem. I felt shame and guilt too. And I'm learning that actually I'm not. And maybe you could learn that too. And I mean, like, It's so simple. It's so simple, but it feels so tough because we are trained as a society to not be vulnerable. We're trained as a society to try to get and to succeed and to achieve and excellence and all of these things. And no part of that leaves room for connection, true connection. And so part of the work that I really want to do is I want to work with straight white cisgender men who to be more mindful. And those are our CEOs, regardless of how big of a shift our demographics are going through right now, those are still our CEO positions. Those are our leadership positions. Those are the folks at the Capitol. And I would really like to work to really access some of that vulnerability. So then again, we can be a little bit open to some of these issues and matters. But if we're just talking about issues and matters directly, we're completely missing this big chunk of the stage that people need to actually go through to feel connected. And I think that's a big undertaking, and I think it's going to take some collective work. But I'm on that mission. I'm on that mission. I want that to happen. I want more of these conversations to happen. And I want vulnerability. And I want us to talk about those fears. Like, let's let it out there so that we could solve.
Yeah, well said. Neelam, this has just been a great conversation. I know there's so much more that we could talk about, but I also know at the time we need to let you go here and get on with your busy day. Before we close things for today, I just wanted to give you a chance to share with the audience how they can connect with you, find out more about your work, and then give us the final word on the topic for today.
Yeah, so LinkedIn is always great to connect with me, Neelam Chand. And then I also Shift SLC is my business right now. It's going through a whole makeover. And so if people want to stay connected, those are great ways. And then I guess final thoughts is just I would ask folks to really take a step back and think about the things that they need to heal, especially when it comes to work around diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging. If it's just belonging, if you could take a moment back and ask yourself, what is it that I need to heal around this idea of belonging for myself? Then we're opening up the doors. Then we're actually having some movement. And
Yeah.
that's all I ask.
Yeah, wonderful. Neelam, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. I encourage the audience to reach out, get connected, find out more about what Neelam can do for you. Thank you, Angela. And as always, we hope everyone can stay healthy and safe, that you can find meaning and purpose at work each and every day. And we hope you all have a great week. Thanks again for joining us for this episode of the Women in Business Impact Lab podcast. We hope you stay healthy and safe, and that you have a great week.